All right, Tom or Anthony here from Tom's Big Spiders, about to tackle a big one here. I'm hoping I can fit this in one episode, but this may be a two-parter. About a year and a half ago or so, I came up with the idea of doing a massive video that would basically have all the information someone who just bought a tarantula would need to know. And it would be assuming this individual went out to their local PetSmart or Petco or some pet store, mom and pop's shop, and picked up a tarantula, and really, they don't know too much about them at all. This happens quite a bit, more often than we'd all like to admit. That people are out, they see one, go, ooh, this would be neat, my friends would love this, I could bring it home, put it on the coffee table, and it would be a topic of conversation, and they don't know much about it. And so the idea of this was to put together all the basic information you'd need right off the bat. Now, granted, this could be a 5-6 hour video if I got as in-depth as I usually do on these, and a lot of these subjects I've covered separately, either through YouTube videos or through blog posts or articles. But I thought it would be neat to, as kind of a framework to jumpstart people. Like, these are the things you need to think about. So I started this video a while ago, but trying to find the footage and make it interesting and edit it, especially considering it's already around the hour and a half mark, was getting pretty ridiculous. So I do want to finish this, and this will be something that I've really wanted to do for a long time on YouTube, to have just this resource that people could go into and then have hopefully links and things going off the articles and whatnot so they can read more about it. But I also thought this would be a cool one for a podcast because obviously I don't have to back up my voice with a bunch of images and demonstrations and such. So we're going to try it out here. Hopefully this will help me finish the video, and then we'll have a blog post about it as well. So whatever you choose, pick your poison, you'll have a way to find this information. So to start off again, we're going to pretend like Joe Schmo just walked into the local PetSmart. Picked up a spider and now is going home trying to do the research, and then hopefully they find this podcast and eventually the video. So the first thing I want to, you know, address is the fact that if you picked up your tarantula at a pet store, you can pretty much be assured that you need to ignore any information that they gave you, and that you possibly may have to return to the pet store to return some useless stuff. So let's talk about that for just a moment. And this isn't all pet stores, so I know I'm working with some pet stores now that have been great. I've referenced Dinky Reptiles and Aquatics, which I've been talking to for a while now, and they've really picked it up. They've got somebody, Sarah, who's in charge of the tarantulas now. They've done a great job improving and obviously showing that they understand what these animals need. It's not everybody, so I want to throw that out there. I don't want people to get offended. I talk to some mom-and-pops people that know their stuff, but especially the big stores, the Petcos, the PetSmart, I don't know what else is around there. I'm in New England. That's what we have. A lot of the information they give you is false. They don't know what they're talking about. The employee there knows nothing about tarantulas. And what they are told to try is to try to sell you as much stuff and crap as possible. So a couple things right off the bat. If you picked up about a 3 or 4 inch spider and they gave you a 10-gallon aquarium, that is probably not the ideal home for your spider. They can be used, but they need to be altered. If you have a 10-gallon aquarium, they can damage themselves if you have a terrestrial species from falls, so you're going to have to fill it up with a lot of substrate. They also might have given you a heat mat. Those are a no-no. Most tarantulas, 99% of them will do well at normal room temperature, which means if you're comfortable, they're comfortable. So we're talking about high 60s and up, maybe mid-60s for some species. If they gave you heat lamps, definite no-no. I'm not going to argue this. I have a bunch of people. I had somebody that just chimed in on one of my, what was it? It was my blog, I believe, with this method to heat tarantulas using lamps, and it was supposed to be easy. And, you know, I'll address this another time, but it was laughable. And this is one of those things that they all try to sell you the lamps because they say they need heat, they need the bask. They're not reptiles, they don't need the bask. So that would be my tip number one. Tarantulas do not need the bask. They don't need heat. Rocks, that'll kill them. What happens is they will find a heat source, and it seems like they need the heat, and they're hugging the heat, and they're loving the heat, but they will dehydrate, dry out, and not be able to move away from the heat source, and that can kill them. So if you bought some of those, sorry, buddy, you got to bring them back. Also, if they gave you a water dish and then handed you a sponge to put in it, take that sponge, throw it right in the garbage. Tarantulas do not suck water from sponges through their fangs like their fangs were straws. The fangs are used to inject venom and to stop and kill their prey. They can drink. They have mouth parts beneath their fangs that they can lower right into water and drink water just like we do. So take those sponges, throw them out. All they will do is breed bacteria. They're nasty. They're disgusting. I'm amazed they're still around because they had this out when I first got my first tarantula back in the 90s. People were putting sponges in the balls. Lucky I took mine out. It was just starting to look nasty, and I threw it out, and I didn't bother getting another one and realized the spider seemed to be drinking fine without it. So there you go. Spraying, depending on the species you get, and we'll get into this in about 2 seconds, if they gave you a spray bottle or something, for the most part, you're not going to need that, and I'll give you an alternative later on in this. So right off the bat, some things to think about. If you're buying it from the pet store, they probably don't have what you'd consider a proper enclosure in stock. If you get the 10-gallon, be prepared to buy a lot of dirt, aka substrate, to put in it. And if it has a mesh top, the mesh tops are inappropriate for tarantulas. Those wire mesh tops, they can get their toe claws caught in them, which leaves them dangling. I've heard of several instances of tarantulas being left dangling for hours until somebody comes home and notices them. This can, again, lead to fall damage. Those abdomens, those nice plump abdomens, if they hit something hard like a water dish or a rock cave, something of that nature, that they can split open and bleed out very, very quickly. And they can lose legs when they fall, because what will happen is they get stuck and the legs detach. So you don't want to injure your tarantula. So just keep in mind, if you've got an adult species, a 10-gallon can be made to work, but you're going to have to make some changes to it. So say you just walked in there, you bought a tarantula. What happens sometimes is people pick the thing up. It's got some kind of weird common name like, I don't know, Portuguese fire hiney. I don't even think Portugal has tarantulas, so I don't even know where that's coming from, but I'm trying to think of something ridiculous that you might get. A lot of times, the common names they give you in the pet store are absurd and not real. So you got to go home and find out what type of tarantula you have. So the first thing I would do is write down the common name they gave you, and then I would go home to the trusty Google and try to research the scientific name, because from this point forward, we're not going to look up information using the common name, because generally, if you find somebody that's writing a care sheet that's using the common name, they have no idea what they're talking about. And I hate to be mean, but I've seen so many people that just regurgitate care sheets that they find online, which screws a lot of people up, and it's not even a species they keep. So you want to look for somebody that hopefully knows what they're talking about when they do tarantulas and knows their scientific names and kind of learn that name. I mean, this isn't it isn't super crucial, but I do find it's easier to look for information when you find the scientific name. Now, what kind of tea is it? Is it an old world or a new world? Now, somebody just getting into the hobby may go, huh? And that's dangerous, because old world and new world tarantulas are quite different. You might have heard that a tarantula bite is no worse than a bee sting and you can't die from one. Well, the second part of that is true. There have been no recorded deaths directly from tarantula venom that we know of. There's been one that's rumored. A girl got bit in the neck by a species, but nobody's sure certain if it's they can actually kill us. It seems like they cannot. Obviously, there would be a lot more bites with the hobby being the way it is and with as many adrenaline-sinking knuckleheads as there are out there. But the first part, that they're just a bee sting, is not true. So here's how we're going to break it down. New world species, these are the ones you probably want to look for if you're just buying your first tarantula, because it is true in most cases, the new world species, their bites will hurt, but it's going to be like a bad hornet or wasp sting. Sometimes they compare it to even just a bad ant bite or something. They're not particularly venomous. These guys have hairs on their abdomens that they kick off in defense. Now, these hairs can be nasty. If you get them in your face or in your eyes, you're in a bit of trouble. On your hands, they're itchy. They can cause rashes. They can cause inflammation, little pustules to pop up. They can be nasty. So don't underestimate this. But for the most part, you're not going to get bitten. That's not their first line of defense. And some of the species you may find that are in the new world category would be the Acanthus scuria, Aphanopelma, Vicularia, Brachypelma, Bumba, Chromatopelma, or the GBB, Euathlis, Gramostola, Haplopus, Neohalotheli, Lasiodora, Megaphopelma, Nandu, oh God, Pamphibidius, Formictopus, a bunch of them, Tapenakinius. All those would all be new world species. The other type would be old world species, and these are the ones you got to look out for, because these guys do not have the hairs. When they defend themselves, they are using fangs and they are using venom that is quite potent and could put a hurting on you. And we talk about some of the things this venom can do. This isn't a "I'm going to be in pain for an hour and then I'm done" type thing. This is you could have heart palpitations, dizziness, vomiting, excruciating pain. Somebody once described it as if somebody took a nail and drove a nail right through their finger and then electrified it for an hour and a half or so, and then it went up through their arm. I mean, this is just nasty, nasty pain, something you don't want to deal with. And I know there's going to be people out there going, oh, it's not going to be that bad. I've taken pain before. From what I've heard described, you don't want this. And for some of the species in this genus, it can be debilitating. You can end up in the hospital looking for pain relief. You could have full body cramping. One guy described getting bit by a species. Cramps started in his toes one night, worked their way all the way up through his feet, his calves, all the way up until it hit his chest and it felt like he was having a heart attack. I don't know many people that want to deal with that. So please keep in mind that if you're dealing with old worlds, their bites are nasty. They can be defensive, meaning they're not going to come out and attack you, but if you open up the cage and they're startled, they're not going to back down, and they will use their fangs to defend themselves. They are also mostly very, very fast. So when you're doing rehousings, They can be gone in a blink of an eye. This is some of our teleporters come from the old world genera of tarantulas. So some of the species you may find are Coelobrachies, Ceratogyrus, Hystericrates, Lampropelma, Orphanacus, Phlogius, Pisolatheria is a big one. Turinochilus, Selena Cosmia, things of those nature. So you're talking about in pet stores, cobalt blue would be a popular one that shows up in pet stores. The P. muticus, the king baboon, often in pet stores. What are the other ones? Singapore blue, you see quite a bit. Or any pokies or Pisolatheria species. These are the ornamental tarantulas. Or an H. maculata, which are the... ornamental baboon tarantulas, if you're looking at common names, because if you're buying from a pet store, you're probably getting the common names. So these are ones you want to be very careful. If you picked one of these up by accident, you need to show extra caution. Do not emulate people you might have seen on YouTube taking their tarantula out and using a paintbrush to shoot it into their hand. You will likely get bit, and you're not going to want to play with that tarantula ever again. It's going to ruin your introduction to this hobby. So something very, very important you need to know, whether you have an old world or a new one, especially if you just went out and bought it. And if you have an old world, sometimes implore people, if you've never had a tarantula before, to return it. If not, you need to hop on YouTube, find some videos of how these guys move, and know what you're in for, because I don't want to scare people, but there is a learning curve to working with these guys for most people. Some people can jump right into them. Another thing, speaking of the spray bottle, you want to know if your tarantula is an arid tarantula or one that is moisture dependent, meaning arid tarantulas, the majority of them do not need extra moisture in their cages, as I totally butcher the pronunciation of that word. They do well on dry dirt or substrate, and they don't need excessive spraying or moistening down or making it rain. They just do well with a water dish. So one of the most popular tarantulas for quite some time to be sold in pet stores was the G. porteri or G. rosea, the rose hair tarantula. And when I first got mine, I have a care, it's like a trifold care thing I got from Petco or something that says I should be spraying it down twice a day, not even twice a week, twice a day. And luckily, I consider myself pretty observant, and I noticed when I would spray the tarantula, not only would it freak it out, but it would go to the opposite end of the enclosure from where I'd sprayed to stay away from the wet stuff. So I stopped spraying it. It did fine. So you need to know, for the sake of your tarantula and its well-being, is this a tarantula that needs to be kept dry or moist? Moisture ones are considered to be more intermediate or expert tarantulas, because it's tricky trying to learn how to do the whole moisture thing and not mess it up. So if you have a dry one, a lot of them would be like the aforementioned porteri, Brachypelma hammeri would be one. Alba pilosum could go either way. That is the curly hair tarantula, very popular in pet stores. Some of them seem to like a little bit of moisture. Some of them seem to be perfectly fine with dry in a water dish. GBB, green bottle blue, C. cyaneopubescens, that is a species that generally wants it bone dry with a water dish, or you can sprinkle some water on the web. So again, look up the scientific name of your tarantula. Find out, is it old world or new world? Because we got a lot of information coming at you here. And then next step, find out what type of habitat does it need. Does it need arid, dry, which is the easiest? And ideally, you've got yourself, if you just bought one, ideally you're sitting there looking at a new world tarantula that needs it dry, because this is going to be easy as pie. However, you may have something that requires moisture, and that's going to be something a little bit different. There are also basically three types of tarantula setups. It's not just throw them in a 10-gallon tank with, you know, an inch of cocoa fiber and be off. There are a few differences in the setups you will need depending on the species you get. So the standard base model would be your terrestrial tarantula. This is one that lives on the ground, may use a burrow if one is provided, but a lot of these guys will just sit right out in the open. They don't hide. They have no problem being visible. A situation like this, you're going to need a container that has more floor space than height. You don't need a lot of height for this one. Back in the 90s, a lot of folks that collected tarantulas and had a lot of tarantulas would keep them in the Sterilite shoe boxes that you find at Walmart or Target or Home Depot or Lowe's or any store. You can see them. They're about 12 inches by maybe 6 inches tall by maybe 7 inches wide in those dimensions. Those are good for most medium-sized tarantulas. Now, again, you can put them in something really, really nice, but you want to think about your animal and making sure that it's set up properly first. And these containers offer perfect sizes for a terrestrial tarantula. Then you put in a couple inches of substrate. You'll want to put in a hide. They sell cork bark. Works great for it because it's a little softer. It doesn't mold, and it looks very, very natural. If you get something made out of rock, make sure there's no jagged edges that it could injure itself on. And you want to give it a water dish. Tarantulas will drink out of water dishes without sponges. You don't want something huge, but something that they can get a drink out of. And some people, if it's a species that requires a little moisture, will put in some sphagnum moss, and then you wet that down, and it gives them another place they can drink from. But that's about it. Also, you can buy some plastic plants or plastic vines, and you can rip the leaves off and use hot glue to glue them on various places, like either, so I've seen some people even put them on the water dishes. You can glue them over the hide and just give them something to web to, because some of them will web. And that's pretty much it for your terrestrial species. The basic setup, very, very easy. And again, you can look for prettier cages. Jamie's Tarantulas makes some beautiful acrylic enclosures that are just fantastic for medium-sized spiders, even large spiders. They're pricey, but they look nice. But again, the 10-gallon tank, you're going to have to do some work, like replace the screen with plexiglass and put a lot of substrate in there to make them work out well. Plus, those don't offer cross ventilation. And when you have a tarantula, one of the things you want to look for is having ventilation in the sides of the enclosure as opposed to the top. The top allows water to evaporate quickly and doesn't really allow for good airflow. You want to keep the inside of those enclosures from getting stagnant. So if you use a Sterilite box, what you want to do is vent it by drilling or burning holes in the sides so that air can pass through. So we've gone over terrestrial. Next one would be arboreal. These are the tree spiders, the ones that live in trees. So when we set them up, we need an enclosure that offers more height than floor space. And you want to set them up. These are ones that will usually web too. So you want to make sure that when you put something in there, you put in a hide, but a lot of people use cork bark tubes. Those work great. Just know that your tarantula may take residence inside the tube and you won't see it very often. Or you can use cork bark flats. And both of these, if you look them up on Amazon or even on Google, you will find an example of what I'm talking about. And you can lean the flat up against the side of the enclosure at like a 40, 45 degree angle, even more. And what it'll do is allow them a space behind. If they want to go behind the cork bark and build a little hide, they will use webbing and create what we call dirt curtains, which is they use web and substrate. If you put some moss, I highly encourage you to throw some moss in there, dry moss even, because they will use that to build like a little burrow behind the cork bark. However, sometimes you'll find them sitting right on the cork bark like they would in the wild, waiting for stuff to come by. So these are tarantulas that would live off the ground. And obviously, in our homes, we can't really build a setup that allows them to get several feet off the ground, but we can give them some height and allow them to be able to perch on the cork bark in a natural-like setting. You also, for a lot of these guys, want to make sure you have anchor points for their webbing. So again, you want to get some of those fake plants. You can buy some from Petco, pet stores. You can go on even some of the aquatics places have some decent plants that you can use. And you can use hot glue to glue leaves and such on the cork bark to give them things to web to. They want what you want to give them water dishes, just like any tarantula. And some of these guys you just want to pay attention to because some of them will have moisture requirements. Some of the popular species that are sold that are arboreal, as I stuttered my way through that one there, are avicularia species. That would be the pink toes, the Carabina versicolors, which would be the Antilles pink toe, although they're not avicularia anymore. They're still called pink toes. And some of the Tapetacinius species or Salmopeus species, which these are New World, but they are very, very fast and they will bite, so keep that in mind. But those are some of the arboreal species. And then the Old World ones, obviously Pisolatheria and the H-maculata come to mind for ones that are arboreal that will need an arboreal setup. So again, something to think about. We've gone through terrestrial. We've gone through arboreal. Next one we're going to go through is fossorial. And this one is mostly because of the C. lividus, which is the cobalt blue that is very, very popular in the hobby. And they're often sold in pet stores. They're often sold in deplorable conditions on dry substrate and only an inch or so of it. And they're miserable. This is a fossorial species or a burrowing species. Fossorial means they live underground. They need to burrow. They will not readily adapt to being on top of shallow substrate, although some of them will web up the snot out of everything and make a burrow for themselves, which is kind of cool. But these are species that need burrows. Now, some of them need dry burrows, and some of them need moist burrows. The majority of the species sold on the market for tarantulas are the Old World species. Many, many, many old Asian species are burrowers, and what they will need is deep, moist substrate. So you need to mix up substrate that is basically moist enough so that if you squeeze it in a clump in your hand, it holds its shape, but not so moist so that water runs out when you squeeze it. So if you're squeezing it and water's pouring out the bottom of your hand, it's too wet. You want to keep it moist. And then you need to keep it moist. So you're going to want to use a substrate, and we'll get to this in a moment, that'll allow it to keep moisture. So if you just bought one of those cobalt blues and you're like, oh, I can't wait to see this beautiful blue spider out and about, please keep in mind, if you're keeping this correctly, you're rarely going to see it. They're not, I think for people that get into tarantulas, they like them in their collection. I do know some folks that love them, and it is a thrill when you catch one out. But keep in mind, this isn't something you're going to be showing off to your friends if you're keeping it correctly. You're going to give it 6, 5, 6, 7 inches of moist substrate packed down. I encourage people, even though they won't use it for very long, give them a starter burrow and with a piece of cork bark over it. So this way, when you put it in the enclosure, it's got a place it can run and hide, and then hopefully it'll start digging its burrow there. And what it's going to do is dig a burrow deep into the dirt, web around the inside of it to hold it up in there to keep it together, and you're not going to see it much. Occasionally, you'll see its front feet sticking out the front of the burrow, and that's when it's waiting to eat. Every once in a while, if you sneak down at night with a flashlight, you might catch one out roaming around. I caught mine out drinking once, which is pretty cool, but you won't see it very much. So again, three types: terrestrial, fossorial, arboreal. You need, for the ingredient, you need the correct enclosure. So fossorial and arboreal, you're going to want deeper enclosures. Again, Sterilite makes a couple deep enclosures you can use for it. A large critter keeper, if you tape up some of the ventilation on top, and even better, if you can use a Dremel tool to put some cross ventilation in the clear plastic part of the sides, can work because they're nice and deep. Even here's where your 10-gallon aquarium or 5-gallon aquarium could work, because you're going to be filling it with a lot of substrate. Just keep in mind that if you have to move the tank, it's going to be heavy as heck. But those could all work. Then you need hides. Cork bark works great. You need water dishes, possibly some sphagnum moss, and some fake plants, and that's about it. That's all it takes to keep one of these guys happy. Now, as far as sizes of enclosures compared to the size of spider, that's a whole event in itself, and I do have a podcast about that, but that should get you set up. Now, we've been talking about substrate, so next up, let's figure out what the heck we're going to put in there for dirt. If you bought it at a pet shop, chances are you were sold a bag or a brick of cocoa fiber. Please know, cocoa fiber is very popular in the hobby. A lot of people use it, and they use it without issue. So some of the other things I'm going to discuss: if you've got cocoa fiber, you're perfectly fine. A couple things about cocoa fiber. If you buy it in a bag, it's usually moist right off the bat. So if you need to dry it out for an arid species, what you can do is get one of those giant foil turkey trays that you use to cook Thanksgiving turkeys in from Walmart. Spread it out in there. Stick it in the oven on low heat. I usually put it on like 190, 200. Keep the door slightly cracked and keep it in there for a couple hours, stirring in between. Do not, I repeat, please do not take the moist substrate and put it in there for a species that does not like moist substrate. It's kind of like torturing them for the first couple weeks until it dries out. I know this happens because people are handed this stuff and told it's what works and it's great. They're not told to dry it out. If you have a brick, it gets a little more complicated because first you have to hydrate the brick. So the easiest way to do it is get a big plastic bin or bucket, drop the brick in, add some warm water till it overflows a little, till it's over top of where the brick is, hold it down, make sure it completely covers the brick, because sometimes the bottom of the brick will get rehydrated, the top won't, it's a pain in the patooey, and then break it up. And then you're going to have to squeeze the excess moisture out of it, put it in another container. And probably if you're using an arid species, you're definitely going to want to bake it again. And this can take hours to dry it completely out. So that's why I moved away from using the bricks, because I found that I could try to rehydrate it and keep it on hand wet, but it would get mold, which was annoying, even if I sealed it sometimes. Or I could try to rehydrate it on the spot, and then it was a day of baking, which makes the whole house smell pretty good and earthy, but my wife wasn't completely appreciative of it. So just something to keep in mind. Cocoa fiber, very popular, can work. I personally use topsoil. I find stuff that is organic without anything added, so you don't want anything that has like chicken dung or anything added for phosphates for plants and stuff of that age. You want just your typical bag of dirt. The drawbacks to it is there can be little pieces and chunks of stuff in it sometimes, and the quality of the dirt can range. I just picked up some bags of Scott's that were pretty good, but I've used Scott's in the past, and it's like somebody, you know, through chunks and rocks and everything else in there. You don't want that particularly. But there's a bunch of different brands. I've used Agway before. Timberline, I think it is, that they sell at like Home Depot or Lowe's or something. So just regular topsoil. Look at, you just want dirt. Read the ingredients. Find that they're just taking it from someplace. And that stuff works great, because keep in mind, in the wild, guess what most tarantulas are on? Dirt. So it works wonderfully. Now, if you're using that and you're using it for a species that you need to add some moisture to, maybe you got that cobalt blue that you're looking at and you're trying to figure out, you know, what to do with it, You can also pick up a bag of vermiculite. Back in the 90s, vermiculite was used exclusively by itself for many tarantulas. You'd throw down a layer of vermiculite, and that's what everybody kept them on. I won't get into the history of it, but people got away from it for a while. But I do find it works great if you add it to topsoil, mix it up. It allows water to percolate on through much easier, and it holds on to water better. So if you have a species that requires moisture, you've looked it up and went, uh-oh, I got to keep this thing moist. Adding moisture can be a pain because for some substrates, it'll just puddle on the top and make like mud and it won't sink in. If you add some vermiculite to it, mix it up, you can see when you pour the water in, it tends to trickle on down much, much more easily. So that's something you can think of. Another thing people use is peat. You can buy big bales of peat. It works well moist. It works well dry. Although I will tell you, if you're using the stuff dry, it is very, very dusty. So if you get this brand new acrylic enclosure, you have an arid species, you go to fill it up with some dry peat, the stuff billows up, makes clouds of dust, and generally coats the whole inside of the acrylic enclosure and makes it look pretty crummy. So just keep that in mind that it is very dusty. Some people, again, will mix the peat with cocoa fiber. You can mix cocoa fiber with dirt. You can mix all three of these, cocoa fiber, dirt, peat, to get something you like. Now, chances are if you just went out and bought your first tarantula, you're not going to spend time playing with dirt yet. But if you get really into the hobby, this is something you can look forward to. I have a blast doing it, just trying different types of substrate and seeing how they work out. What works good for dry species? What works good for moist species? Things of that nature, and you can completely mix them up and have fun with it and have a little science experiments like my son and I did a few years back just to see what holds water better. So now you've got your tarantula enclosure, you pick something, perhaps you picked a Sterilite container for your terrestrial species, you've got a cork bark hide in a corner, in the opposite corner you have a water dish, you maybe put a little sphagnum in there and some artificial plants to spruce it up a bit. Perhaps you bought a really nice enclosure, but you made sure to put enough substrate in so it can't die from a fall, and everything's all set and ready to go. But unfortunately, your spider is cowering in the corner, and you dropped in the first food item, and it's not responding to it. It's not eating. You heard these things were vicious predators. It's not moving. This is something that freaks a lot of people out. Please keep in mind that, like any animal, they can become stressed or show signs of stress. And although there's still arguments about how intelligent they are, anybody that's got a new tarantula and put it in its new home has probably seen that they will kind of cower. Their stress pose is they pull their knees up over their carapace and kind of hide in the corner. They look very sickly. This means that they are not settled in. So please keep in mind that if you just got your tarantula home and dropped it in, it can take a few days to, in some cases, several weeks for it to settle in. For some species, it'll be obvious when they've settled in because they will adapt to the burrow, and then they usually immediately web up a little bit over the burrow. That's them making it their home. That's, all right, this is where I'm living. This is my home. It's kind of picture it decorating when you move into a new house. That's a sign that they're in. For arboreal species, a lot of them will, again, start hiding underneath the cork bark to begin. They will use some of the sphagnum you provided them, some of the substrate, and their webbing to start building up curtains. They'll make like little burrows and hide underneath there. That's good. Heavy webbing species. Some of the species will web quite a bit. Caribbean versicolor usually web a lot. Haplopus species, Columbia larges usually web a lot. And the GBB, green bottle blue, or C. cyaneopubescens will web a lot, but it can take them a while. So if you get one and you put it in the tank and 2 days later it hasn't done a lot of webbing, that's not abnormal. They need to feel secure once they figure out, you know, their new surroundings, they figure out where they're going to make their den. You should, as long as you supplied them those anchor points we mentioned earlier, so plants, vines, things of that nature, they will start webbing up their enclosures. So please, if you get your new tarantula home and drop it in, it doesn't eat it right away, do not panic. This is very, very normal. Watch it. Don't spray the snot. I've heard people like, oh, it must be dehydrated. I'm just going to spray the crap out of it. Don't do that. Let it settle in. Put it in a place in your home where it's not going to get a lot of traffic. Let it find a spot. Usually you'll see they settle in. And this is also the reason I like to give the burrowers a hide to start off with a starter burrow underneath. Use like a spoon or something to build a little burrow underneath, because usually this allows them to bolt to those burrows. They're not used to being out in the light. They'll bolt to those burrows, and then that'll usually allow them to start burrowing. I've had some start that night creating their burrow, so something to think about. Now, we mentioned feeding. This is another one that trips people out. These are animals that don't need to eat every day. We need to get that into our heads very, very quickly, because it's going to lead to some stress later on. Tarantulas are in the wild. They basically are opportunistic hunters. They have to kind of wait around a general area, and they wait for something to run into them, and they eat it. There are times when food's very plentiful. So if food's very plentiful, they're going to eat a lot. If food's not plentiful, they might not be eating very often at all. several people, and this is going to shock a lot of people, several people I've talked to in the hobby feed their adults once a month, and they're perfectly healthy. They're fine. They're living forever. That's something to keep in mind. This isn't like a dog or a cat or a gerbil or a bird or something that needs to be fed, you know, at least daily, if not twice a day. Once a week is a good schedule for most of these guys, and you don't want to overfeed them. In other words, the person at Petco probably said, here you go, here are a dozen crickets. Dump these all in with your tarantula. Please don't do that. Do not dump in a bunch of crickets. Feed your tarantula one item at a time, perhaps two, sometimes three. But what you want to do is, so for example, if we're using crickets and you have your G. porteri, three crickets a month is usually good for those guys. So if you want to feed them all at one shot, drop in a cricket. If it grabs a cricket, you can try dropping another one in front of them. Sometimes they'll grab that one, they'll web them all together, make a little cricket burrito, and everything's great. But for the most part, a lot of these guys, you can get away with dropping one or two in. Just make sure they grab them up. If they don't eat, you want to pull them out the next day. They will annoy the animal. If the animal goes into premolt, crickets can bite and they can chew. And there's been instances of crickets killing tarantulas that are molting. Not to freak people out, but it's not something you want to leave in there. Also, if they die, they start to rot, they attract pests that you don't want in your enclosure. So something to think about, get those guys out if they don't eat right away. As far as what to feed them, you can feed them crickets. If you bought it from a pet store, chances are they have crickets on hand. Those are the easiest things to get a hold of. As far as sizes, there are a lot of articles out there you can look to see what sizes to give them. An adult, if you just bought an adult, you're talking a large. If you bought a larger juvenile 3-inch spider, they will most likely eat larges as well. Other things you can use, mealworms work great. If you use mealworms, though, keep in mind that they can and will burrow and disappear and come back as big black beetles, which the tarantulas will not eat. There are also waxworms that work pretty well. There are superworms, but keep in mind superworms can, quote-unquote, bite. They grab onto them, and I've actually seen it. I posted a video not that long ago where somebody pointed out that while the tarantula was eating the superworm turned around and grabbed its leg and bit it, and it was trying to shake it off. So the best thing to do with those is to crush the heads. Sounds gross, but they will not burrow, they will not bite, and then just drop it using tongs. And this is another thing, if you haven't picked up a pair of tongs, hop on Amazon right now, buy a pair of nice long tongs so you can feed these guys, because they're invaluable in the hobby of taking care of these guys. Use your tongs and drop it in front of it. I do not encourage people to tong feed, only because they can chip or break fangs if they grab onto those tongs. And you can see plenty of examples on that YouTube if you look, where they grab onto them. It's just something I don't want to take the chance with. But if you can drop it, if your tarantula is aware, and drop it right in front of them, it will eat. Other things, roaches. They have dubia roaches. They have red runner roaches. The thing with roaches is most pet stores don't seem to carry them, or if they do, I know Petco basically sells like four dubia roaches for about $10, which is just highway robbery. So if you do get a larger collection, that might be something you think about down the line. But for the time being, find stuff that you can buy inexpensively and only a few of at your local pet store. Crickets, mealworms, again, are great because you can keep them. You can dump some oatmeal in a bucket and keep them in there. They're not very difficult to keep. You can look up information on that, and always have food available. And for the most part, if you have an adult, you're going to feed it once a week. If you have slings, you might want to feed it twice a week. And I have a whole thing on slings. If you're interested, you can look up Tom's Big Spiders. I have basically a guide on how to raise slings, also on YouTube. So I'm not going to get into that, but that's something you can think about as well. As if you picked up a sling, I would hop over and read that one as well. So now it's been eating for a little while, you've been showing your friends, you've got it in the corner of your house where it's not too drafty, because that's something to think about as well. If you're putting it right next to your living room door and it's wintertime and there's gusts of air coming in there, freezing air, that doesn't quite count as room temperature. That's going to kind of not be particularly great for your tarantula. So you want to put it in a spot where it's not getting a lot of cold air, a burst of cold air, just steady corner of the house where you maintain a steady temperature, and suddenly your tarantula stops eating. Well, here is the period called premolt that most people sadly start to dread at first because it's confusing. Basically, in order to grow, a tarantula doesn't just grow like you and I. It basically sheds its entire exoskeleton. So what you're looking at when you look at your tarantula is its exoskeleton. It's holding everything in, protecting everything. That goes, it basically flips on its back. So if you see your tarantula on its back, it's molting, it's not dead. And pops that carapace off the back, that plate on the back where what we'd probably refer to as the head. And then it pulls itself out like you'd pull your hand out of a glove, and it leaves the old exoskeleton behind. when they go into pre-molt, basically what happens is that once they eat to a certain point and their bodies tell them they have enough nutrients, they stop eating. So if you've, we mentioned earlier, the feeding schedule, if you've been feeding your tarantula a dozen crickets a week, chances are it's going to go into pre-molt more quickly. So it might only eat for 2 weeks and then stop eating. And the pre-molt's going to last longer. So you have what is called a fast. A fast is when a tarantula stops eating for months at a time. It freaks people out. I just talked to somebody that I believe said their G. porteri had fasted for 4 years. That is the longest I have ever heard of. That's not normally the case, but several months is very, very normal. And for people just getting into the hobby, fasts are terrifying. They think it's like if your dog stops eating for a week, your dog is probably in really bad shape. You're terrified. It's not the same with tarantulas. This is very, very normal. They will fast for months at a time. And usually it's just their body preparing to get that new exoskeleton ready so they can molt. So some things to do when you recognize this, or some things to look for: your tarantula will stop eating. If you drop a cricket in and your usually ravenous tarantula isn't going at it, is its butt, is its abdomen nice and plump? If it is, then your tarantula is probably getting ready to molt, so it's in pre-molt. Sometimes they'll become more lethargic. They will move around more slowly, seem a little less responsive when you disturb the cage. Many of them will seal themselves in their burrow, so they'll go into their burrows and cover up the entrances. If you see webbing over the entrance of a burrow or over the entrance of its cave, do not disturb it. Do not shove prey items down the burrow or into the burrow. That's not good. That's their way of putting up the do not disturb sign. That's because they have no intention of eating. So if you put something in there, all you're going to do is stress it, and there's a good chance it's going to kill the item if it gets in there. Leave it in there. It's going to rot and make a mess of its burrow. Another thing to look for is, speaking of burrows, is some of them will completely bury themselves. This is particularly prevalent among slings. If you have smaller specimens and you give them enough substrate, they will completely bury themselves. And this is terrifying to keepers, but it's okay. They're not going to die. They're not going to suffocate. The burrow isn't going to collapse. 99.9% of the time, this is a natural occurrence, and you need do nothing but make sure the water dish is full and maybe keep a moist corner of substrate just in case. And that's something to think about with a lot of these species. When they molt, they lose a lot of fluid, so you want to make sure water is available, and maybe, you know, make it rain a little bit. You can take a water bottle and poke some holes in it so you can make like a rain shower and just keep one corner of their area dry, of their enclosure dry, the substrate, so that they have a moist spot. This is obviously not for species that need it completely arid. For a GBB, you can trickle some water on the webbing, but you do want to make sure during this time that they have access to water. As we talked about earlier, arboreal species will often build those dirt curtains, and they will hide. They'll become much more secretive. They're a little more difficult to recognize when they're in pre-molt because their abdomens don't get quite so large. So you want to look at behavior. Are they more secretive? They'll kind of crunch up in a corner and not come out much. They will hide in those dirt curtains. So again, do not disturb them. Avicularia species will often build themselves like a little web cocoon and hide in it. So that's a good telltale sign. But please keep in mind, if your spider has been eating fine, and we're not going to get into ailments right now because we'll just pretend like you just got a spider, you don't need to hear about the ailments yet. There's a very good chance if it just suddenly stops eating that this is a natural occurrence. It's entering premolt, and what will happen is the spider will eventually flip over. So if you find it on its back, it is not dead. It's molting and shed that exoskeleton. Now, let's fast forward a little bit. You've heeded my advice, you've heeded my warnings, you haven't bothered your tarantula, it's been sitting there for, and some of these pre-molt periods, if you have a larger tarantula, can go on for months, keep that in mind, and you finally came home from work one day, and there it is, it's got its old exoskeleton crumpled up beneath it. It might have it crumpled up in its mouth like it's eating it. What it's doing is sucking up some of the extra juices that it lost during that molting process, because they basically pump fluid between the two levels of exoskeletons to loosen up so they can get out. This is completely normal, and you have a freshly molted tarantula there. Resist the urge to feed it. Do not feed it yet. When tarantulas molt and they come out, their fangs, if you can see it, will be a pale white yellowish color. That's because they are not hardened yet. They cannot eat right now. They cannot kill anything with those fangs. They need several days, and if it's a larger specimen, if we're dealing with an adult here, you're going to want to give it at least a couple weeks to harden up. When those fangs are nice and black again, it's probably ready to eat. But do not offer food right away. I know it's going to look like it's skinny, it's gangly. You're going to see it doing these strange stretches that some people refer to as spider yoga as it gets used to its new exoskeleton, stretches everything out as it hardens up. Again, totally normal behavior. right after it molts, it may look like it's in a what we call the death curl, where they curl their legs underneath them, and this is usually a sign they're dying. But after a molt, it just means they're stretching after a molt. Again, totally 100% normal. But you're going to want to give it several weeks before you offer a food item. When you offer the food item, you drop it in. A spider that is just molted and is ready to eat will hop on that thing quick usually. So if it hops on it quick, great, it's eating again, time to fatten it up and repeat the process. However, if you drop it in and it bats it away or shies away, it is not ready to eat, pull it out, wait another week. That's the easiest thing to do. Your spider will not starve in that time. You do want to make sure there's water available, and this is another important spot to have water because they have lost a lot of fluid during this process, and you may catch them drinking during this time, so make sure water is available. And then once it's ready to eat, it's ready to eat on to the next molt, which is molting can be terrifying because this is one of the spots where you there is risk of losing a tarantula. It doesn't happen often, but you will hear of people losing tarantulas and molts. So I think a lot of us, even that have had tarantulas for a while, still kind of get nervous during this period, but it's also one of the most amazing things you'll ever see. And it's incredible when your tarantula molts and you get to see how much size it put on. You get to take out the old molt. If you don't know what sex it is, you can sex it from a molt. And again, you can look online on my website for information on that. But it's both a stressful and a joyous time. Now, as far as maintenance with these guys, they are about as easy to keep as any animal that you can buy. You do not, I repeat, you do not have to constantly change substrate like you would with, say, snakes. I used to have to change out my substrate quite a bit because once they go to the bathroom on it, it gets nasty. Rabbits, any, I'm just throwing out rabbits there, rats, any animal you might keep that you have to change the bedding quite a bit. That's not the case with tarantulas. When you're doing maintenance, what you want to look for are boluses, which are the remains of prey. When they eat the prey, they usually end up with a little crusty, whitish-looking, almost looks like a crusty little piece of coral or pebble that is the remains of the food item. They're usually dry, so by themselves they're not an issue, but if you accidentally get one wet, they can cause mold, they can attract flies and pests. So you want to go in with those tongs that I told you to buy earlier and take those out. They poop. You normally can't find it, but if you see some on the ground, you can take a little, I have plastic spoons around, or you can use a regular spoon. If your wife doesn't catch you using one of the dinner spoons, you can use one of those. If she does catch you, you're in trouble. And you can use those to just kind of, I go through, and when I feed them, and this is my maintenance plan, when I feed them once a week, my adults I feed once a week, I take them out, I take out the water dish, I clean it, I refill it. I look for boluses, I pluck those out, I look for any mold. Sometimes you get mold, you don't want mold, we're not going to get too much into that, but something to keep an eye on. If you find up a little patch of mold, take the easiest thing to do is take the spoon, scoop out the offensive area, put some dry substrate on top of it, usually it goes away. If you find a spot with some poop, same thing, scoop it out, get it out of there. And that's about it. Remove, if there's a dead prey item, definitely remove those because it can cause issues with, you know, pests and gnats and things of that nature that you don't want in your enclosure. And that's about it. Then you drop your prey item in, put the cover on, and it's good to go. They are not high maintenance pets. They don't need to be fiddled with, and they don't need to be cleaned often. If you get a bad case of mold, then you might want to rehouse. If there's a situation where something goes wrong, I've had people dump in too much water in an enclosure to an arid species, and that might be an instance where you clean it out. But for the most part, you can keep the same substrate in there for quite a while. And if you have an arboreal species, congratulations. They love to shoot poo out of them like it's a cannon all over the sides of your clean enclosure. So if you got them in one of those nice exoterras with the foam backgrounds, those are going to be festooned in white poo, which is fantastic. They also poo on the glass. You cannot use, you do not want to use harsh cleaners or any cleaners. I don't even use any cleaners. I will occasionally break out some vinegar and mix it with water to give a little bit of a oomph to my cleaning, but I don't use any cleaners. I've heard people trying to squirt Windex in there and things of that nature. You can't use that. Best thing you can do, clean roll of kitchen roll or paper towel. Kitchen roll, that's for my people overseas. I noticed that they don't call it paper towel over there, so everybody knows what I'm talking about. Wet it down with warm or hot water and then scrub the outside. The stuff will come off. It'll be milky. It's kind of nasty, but you get used to it because it starts off, it's chalky and white. And as you activate it with water, it'll start kind of smearing around. So you just got to clean it off and be careful not to use any cleaners in there because that can be harmful to the animals. But usually you can scrape or clean it off. It doesn't go too badly and I'll at least keep it presentable. And if you have fake plants and things of that nature in there, again, you may have to pluck them out and wash them. The best way to do it is turn the water on about as hot as you can take it, run the plant under it, and just kind of scrub it with your hands. The stuff comes right off. It's pretty easy. But that's about it. They don't take a lot of – I think what makes them such great pets is the fact that they are so low maintenance. They're fascinating. I mean, I don't – who's not fascinated by a giant spider? I guess most people are actually terrified by a giant spider, but they're fascinating. They're terrifying for friends. They're interesting. They're great animals, but they're not that difficult to take care of. So that's something we don't want to overcomplicate. And finally, for those of you who might have one of the moisture-dependent species we're talking about, the trick with these guys, and again, if you this is your first tarantula, you are jumping in the deep end, because chances are you have an old world, and trying to learn how to keep things moist can be very, very tricky. But what I do is, if you have 7 or 8 inches of moist substrate, what you want to do is every once in a while make sure that you add water to it. The easiest way to do it is, I have a big Gatorade bottle that I poked holes in the top, so it's kind of like makes it rain like a downpour, and I use that to basically soak down one side of it. One trick I like to use, if you're using a plastic bin or something of that nature, you can squirt the water so it goes down the side of the bin, trickles down between the substrate and the enclosure, and sinks down into those bottom layers. Because in theory, you don't want to worry so much about keeping the top layers moist. You want to make sure the bottom stays moist. Because if you have a tarantula that is burrowing, they are going to use that to regulate the level of moisture they need. So they will dig down to the moist levels in the bottom, and that will keep them perfectly fine, even if the first 3-4 inches are dry. You can usually look through the sides of an enclosure and see the levels of substrate as it's drying out. So like when you first wet it, you might see a little lighter color sub on the top, but that band will get larger and larger and larger. When you see it getting close to the bottom or a few inches from the bottom, that's when you want to go and re-add water to it. So again, a lot of people talk about misting, and I will sometimes mist the sides of enclosures before bedtime, because tarantulas will drink off of that. Like in the wild, they'll drink dew off of plants or things of that. If it rains, they can drink off of puddles or rocks. So it gives it another place to drink from, but keep in mind the misting, it does squirt in a lot of air, and these tarantulas use their hairs as a sense organ, and this can really rile them up, so you want to be careful with that. But as far as using it to moisten substrate, I'm sorry, misting just doesn't work very well. You need to kind of soak the stuff down. So another trick that I've used is use something like the end of a paintbrush or something long and narrow to make grooves down the sides of the enclosure, so that when you pour water in, the water immediately trickles right down to the bottom. And the nice thing is, if you're going to get mold, it's usually up top. If you keep the bottom moist and the top dry, it usually helps do away with mold. So I think that about covers most of it. Again, a lot of these subtopics I've discussed more in depth on my YouTube channel and on my blog, and I'm not trying to just pimp out my own stuff here, but I do spend a lot of time writing and making these videos, so hopefully that'll be something people can search up if they're still confused, and I'm sure there will be still some confusion. This can be a lot to absorb, but I think I covered the majority of it. So basically, if you just bought a tarantula or you're just about going to buy a tarantula, these are the things you need to be aware of. These are the important things. Don't listen to the pet stores. Set up a correct enclosure. It can be something you found as far as a Sterilite container. Again, I would implore you to look online for some things. I did a blog post a while back where I talk about different types of enclosures and I go through some of the more common things. Feel free to check that out or go on YouTube and watch some great tarantula enthusiasts out there doing some amazing videos that show you different type of enclosures. I would encourage anybody getting into the hobby to start simple as far as enclosure stuff. That's one thing I am going to throw out there. If you want to get into the bioactive type stuff with real plants and things of that nature, get the basic husbandry down before you do that, because it's most important that you're taking care of your animal correctly. And sometimes those Spartan enclosures, they're the Sterilites with not a lot of stuff going on it, are a good place to start that you can monitor your animal and give it the best home and the proper environment it needs to start off. Then you can start experimenting and doing some of the cooler stuff. So I would encourage that. But again, you don't need the sponges. Give it a water dish. Give it a hide. Give it some plastic foliage. Make sure the cage is not too tall so that it can hurt itself. If it's a terrestrial species or a fossorial species, if it's a fossorial species, it needs deep substrate. If it's an arboreal species, it needs some height and a cork bark or some type of hide that allows it to get up off the ground. Again, know which type of spider you're getting. If you just picked up an old world and you've never had a tarantula before, please be careful. I know a lot of people do this, and we all talk about like it's this horrible thing if a newbie gets it. And I think in some cases it can be, but I'd be willing to bet it happens a lot and we never hear about it. Just be informed. If you go online and you just bought this tarantula and you're going to be rehousing and caring for it correctly, you have to know the risks of it. And then really fast, one thing I didn't cover in this one is handling. Please keep in mind, if you're going to handle, you want to do some research and find out the theories on handling, because it's not as cut and dry as you may think. A lot of people go into the hobby thinking everybody handles. They do not. I'm not going to rally against handling here. That's not what I'm about. I'm about people making informed decisions for themselves. I personally do not handle mine. I've done it on occasion, but I generally do hands-off, and it's because I work with a lot of different species that I need to just be well-trained not to put my hands anywhere near them. However, if you've got this spider, you need to make sure, A, if it's an old world, do not handle. Just take that right off the list. I do not believe there's any need to handle. You don't want to suffer that kind of bite, and especially as your introduction to the hobby. If you've got a new world species and somebody told you, oh, these are great, they're very tractable, you can handle them, they love being handled, please just take a moment out, do some research. I have an article that compares the two varying viewpoints on handling that will kind of give you the information you need in a way that you can make your own decision, or go out on YouTube, check out some of the videos on there, look up handling on YouTube and see what people say. But there is an art to doing it if you're going to do it correctly and safely. And again, there's always the risk that you get bit or the spider bolts. There's risks you need to be aware of. So just keep in mind that I'm not telling you not to handle, but I am telling you that a lot of people in the hobby do not handle. And if you do handle, you need to talk to some of the people that do responsibly and find out what the risks are and what you're in for. So that should about do it. I think I've talked long enough. As usual, you can find me on Facebook if you want to comment on these. It seems to be the best place to do it. I also have my YouTube channel or tomsbigspiders.com, in which I post a lot of husbandry notes and articles and things of that nature. So again, thanks so much for listening for this long, long podcast, but I guess people have been enjoying the longer one, so that works out. And I'll catch you guys next time.